Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly 45-minute segment of news from Palestine and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal military occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program presents news and analysis from the Palestinian perspective, a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. We ask our listeners, as we do every week, were you involved last week in the Palestine-Israel peace movement and the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's savage military attacks against them to force them out of their homes and annex their properties into Israel? Did you speak out on the atrocities Israel is committing every day in Gaza and the West Bank? If not, why not? What is your reason not to? It is Sunday, May 3rd, 2009. We have a few event announcements, so you may need to take notes. This coming week is Palestine Awareness Week at MIT, starting tomorrow through Thursday. On Monday, May 4th, Noam Chomsky will give a talk on Palestine and Israel at 6 p.m. in room 10250. On Tuesday, the film Occupation 101 will be screened at 7 p.m. in room 4-237. On Wednesday, Professor Anat Bilecki will give a talk, co-sponsored by Amnesty International at MIT, on human rights in the occupied territories at 6:30 p.m. in room 6-120. And on Thursday, the film Slingshot Hip-Hop about Palestinian hip-hop will be screened at 7 p.m. in room 4-237. Refreshments and snacks will be served at all events from Tuesday, May 5th through Thursday, May 7th. On Wednesday, May 6th, the Boston chapter of American Jews for a Just Peace will be presenting a talk by Jimmy Johnson, International Coordinator for the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions. Mr. Johnson is on a speaking tour of the United States after attending the Durban conference. He will be presenting the results of ICAD's ongoing investigation into the U.S.-Israeli collaboration on the development and testing of the high-tech weaponry Israel used in occupied Palestine. And he will report on the aftermath of the war on Gaza and the recent Israeli elections. The event will take place on May 6th at 8 p.m. at the Palestine Cultural Center for Peace, located at 41 Quint Avenue in Alston. Please mark your calendars for this important event. And on Sunday, May 9th, the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee will hold its fourth annual community banquet, featuring keynote speaker attorney Noura Erekat and honoring the work of Dr. Susan Akram, clinical professor of law at Boston University. The event will take place at the Hyatt Harborside Hotel starting at 6 p.m. with a private reception with Ms. Noura Erekat, followed by registration at 6:45 p.m., dinner at 7:30 p.m., keynote address by attorney Erekat at 8:30 p.m., and music and dancing at 9:30 p.m. To reserve your seat, please call 617-492-3282 or email info@adcma.org. That's info@adcma.org. Now for a brief summary of news highlights. The United Nations has asked Israel to freeze all demolition orders in East Jerusalem and to provide more housing for Palestinians. According to a report by the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Human Affairs, out of the 250,000 Palestinians living in East Jerusalem, 60,000 are at risk of having their homes demolished by Israel. The mayor of Jerusalem, Nir Barkat, disputed the figures but admitted that there was a planning crisis, quote-unquote, in all of Jerusalem. A spokesman said that a master plan for the city would be announced in the coming weeks. Approximately 1,500 demolition orders have already been issued and are pending. If carried out, they would make 9,000 people homeless, half of them children. Overall, the United Nations estimates a gap of about 1,100 housing units per year in the Palestinian community in East Jerusalem. Only 13% of occupied East Jerusalem is zoned by the Israeli authorities for Palestinian construction, while one-third of East Jerusalem has been expropriated for settlement housing projects, where more than 195,000 Israeli settlers reside. The Pope is expected to arrive in Jerusalem this coming Thursday, May 7th, for his visit to Israel and the occupied territories, in a move apparently intended to limit the Pope's exposure to Palestinians residing in Jerusalem. Israeli police have been telling the residents and store owners in an East Jerusalem neighborhood that the area will be shut down for the Pope's visit, and that residents should stay inside their homes for the duration of his visit without attempting to leave them. Samer Andrea Karkar, a Palestinian who lives on Latin Patriarch Street in East Jerusalem, was assaulted by Israeli police. Mr. Karkar was trying to convince the police to allow his sister and her sleeping children to return home. On Friday, May 1st, on the occasion of the Day of International Labor Solidarity, the Free Gaza Movement announced the launching of the Hope Fleet to Gaza, a new fleet of ships to provide much-needed humanitarian aid and building supplies to Gaza. The boat, named Free Gaza, which arrived in Gaza in August 2008, the first boat to dock in Gaza in 41 years, will be the lead vessel in the flotilla and will be donated to the fishermen of Gaza. The Dignity will carry Nobel laureate Mairead McGuire, Holocaust survivor Hedy Epstein, and U.S. Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney. The date of departure of the flotilla is not known at this time. Members of the Viva Palestina convoy, which entered Gaza on March 9th, are organizing a bigger convoy due to leave the United Kingdom on October 4th. A United States convoy is also being organized, consisting of 500 vehicles and bringing $10 million in aid to Gaza. Departure of the United States convoy is set for July 4th. Following the submittal by Egypt of new proposals to deal with the division between Fatah and Hamas, the dialogue talks were postponed until mid-May to give the parties time to consult with their respective leaderships. Fatah, however, has deepened the division. Blaming Hamas, Mr. Hassan Khader, a Fatah legislator with the Palestinian Legislative Council, threatened to cancel the elections scheduled for early next year and expressed the stupefying demand that President Abbas present a draft proposal to U.S. President Barack Obama dismantling the Palestinian Authority in exchange for a commitment to end popular resistance against Israel. One would have to look very hard to find a more ludicrous proposal. It is no secret that Israeli society has swung to the right and elected an ultra-rightist government headed by Benjamin Netanyahu and Avigdor Lieberman. The government has recently cracked down on peace activists. Members of New Profile, a group of courageous Israeli women and men who daringly suggest that Israel need not be the military society it has become, were harassed and arrested. On the morning of April 26th, Israeli police raided the homes of several New Profile activists in different parts of Israel. The activists had their computers confiscated, were called for interrogations, and have only been released upon signing agreements not to contact their political friends for 30 days. The group has issued a worldwide appeal for help. They are asking everyone to contact the Israeli Attorney General to demand an immediate end to this harassment. You can do this by going to the Jewish Voice for Peace website at Jewish Voice for Peace, all one word, jewishvoiceforpeace.org, and sign a petition. Israel today has little tolerance for public dissent. Today we take up the subject of civil rights and racism in Israel. Does Israel live up to the image the American public has been trained to accept of it as a democratic state? I had the privilege of discussing that subject last Thursday with Mr. Hassan Jabarin, founder and general director of Adela, the legal center for Arab minority rights in Israel. Mr. Jabarin holds an LLB in law and a BA in philosophy from Tel Aviv University, and an LLM in law from the American University's Washington College of Law. He worked as a staff attorney with the Association for Civil Rights in Israel for 4 years, received the American University's Peter Cicchino Award for Outstanding Advocacy in the Public Interest in 2000, and was adjunct lecturer at the Faculty of Law at Haifa University from 1998 to 2000. Mr. Jabarin currently lectures at Tel Aviv University and is giving a semester-long annual course on Arab minority rights and Israeli law at the Hebrew University. He was a Yale University World Fellow for the year 2005-2006 and has published articles on citizenship, the legal status of the Arab minority in Israel, and constitutionalism in academic law reviews. Here is the recording of that interview in its entirety.
Good afternoon, Mr. Hassan Jabarin.
Good afternoon.
And thank you for being our guest on This Week in Palestine.
Welcome.
You live in Israel?
Yeah, I live in Haifa, one of the big cities. Yeah. And originally, it's one of the biggest Palestinian towns in 1948. And now today, it's mixed city. And yes, my office in Haifa, and I live there in Israel.
Could you tell us about the work of Adala?
Yeah, Adala is the first Palestinian legal center in Israel. Our main project is litigation before Israel Supreme Court and international advocacy on matters regarding discrimination against the Palestinian citizen of Israel and cases regarding the occupation, meaning using the international humanitarian law in West Bank, Gaza, and Jerusalem. We filed many cases before Israeli Supreme Court. Many of them became landmark cases, and we engaged in many important academic debates in Israel regarding the international advocacy. Also, we appear before UN committees for human rights regarding reviewing Israel relation between itself and its citizens, Palestinian citizens, and the status of the occupied territories, West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem.
So your work, and since you're living in Israel, your experience and your work lead you to the conclusion that the Arab minority, or more precisely, the Palestinian citizens of Israel, are discriminated against in Israel.
Yes, this is also the Israeli Jews, the majority of them, and the Supreme Court itself admit that one of the main issues inside Israel is that institutional discrimination against the Palestinians in Israel. Today, the Palestinians of Israel constitute 20% of the citizens of Israel. But if we check how many percentage of the workers of the state, we find that just less than 6% of the state workers, they are Palestinian in Israel. And the discrimination is on all the fields, social, economic, and land, and education, and in prisoners' rights, and criminal justice, and in all the fields. One of the main problems of the Palestinians in Israel facing that discrimination in land, 76% of their private land were confiscated by Israel, and until now there is no any solution for this matter. A fourth of our population, meaning fourth of the Palestinian citizen of Israel, they are considered displaced persons. What I mean, displaced persons, after the establishment of Israel, about fourth of them were asked to leave their villages in the north for security reasons, and until now they are not allowed to come back to their villages. And this case many of our population in the south live in what we call unrecognized villages, the Bedouin. They live in villages that they have no names, official names. They are not on any official map. They don't belong to any local council, and their land is not considered for planning land, and therefore their homes are considered illegal, meaning a matter of demolition, and they are not entitled for any services. One of the cases that we filed before Israeli Supreme Court even to have a drinking water for those villages. And there, if we reach this level to submit petition before Israeli Supreme Court to ask Israel, as one of the most rich country and modern country in economic, to supply drinking water to a big part of its population, this could be good indication about the oppression and the discrimination that a Palestinian citizen of Israel face in Israel.
And the Knesset also passes legislation that discriminates against the Palestinian citizens of Israel.
Yeah,
so the discrimination is in law.
Yeah, that's why I use the term institutional discrimination.
Uh-huh.
When I said institutional discrimination, I didn't mean discrimination by practice only. But it's part of the institution, part of the law itself. One of the most racist law against the Palestinian citizen of Israel is the citizenship law, which bans a Palestinian to have family life with their spouses if their spouses originally from the West Bank or Gaza, or originally they are Lebanese or Syrian or Iranian or Iraq. For example, if I will meet American academic woman, and we decided to get married and to live in Haifa, we cannot live together if by accident we found that she is originally from Lebanon. And we have cases like that. Today, one of the major cases between Israel and U.S. universities, that there is a program of U.S. university which called Study Abroad, that they send their American students to Israeli universities to study, and Israel sent Israeli students to American universities. Now, some of U.S. universities face the problem that they cannot send American students that they have Palestinian or Lebanese or Syrian or Iranian or Iraqi origin, because Israel law prohibits directly those people to enter Israel. If the law, the citizenship law, prohibits them to enter Israel just because of their origin, so I am an Arab person, I am a Palestinian citizen, I won't have the opportunity even to have family life with my spouse in Israel. This is one of the most racist law that we are facing, and we submitted a petition before the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court was split, 6 justices against us, who confirmed the law, and 5 say that this law is discriminatory against the Palestinian Israel. This law is racist. This law is unconstitutional. But in the end, this law was confirmed.
This law was unconstitutional, but Israel has no constitution. It just has its basic law.
But I say that the majority of the court confirmed the law.
Yes.
I said the minority, 5 justices vis-a-vis 6 justices, say unconstitutional. But in the end, the court confirmed the law. The majority of the law confirmed that. Yes, Israel doesn't have a written constitution like U.S., but they have new basic laws which were enacted in the beginning of the 90s, and they have status of constitution, meaning if I prove before the Israeli Supreme Court that my constitutional rights, such as right of equality, rights of dignity, liberty, was violated, the Supreme Court has the jurisdiction to strike down the law. And this is why we brought this case before Israeli Supreme Court, but in the end, we failed. what I said to be failed in the court, but I think that justice was failed, not we as petitioners.
Well, and as an advocate for the rights of minorities, there is a prohibition, I think, that anyone, I think it was maybe a year or two ago, that the Shin Bet said that they would prosecute anyone who advocates for equal rights and does not recognize the Jewish character of the state. Because by advocating for Jewish for equal rights, does not recognize the superiority of the Jewish citizen over the non-Jewish citizen. I believe that Mr. Azmi Bishara, who was a member of the Knesset, was stripped of his parliamentary immunity because of his declarations, of his public speech. So even public speech is being discriminated against Palestinian citizens of Israel.
The Israel law says that you are not allowed to participate in the election as a political party. You won't have the right to be elected if you violate the constitutional principle of Israel as a Jewish and democratic state. And personally, I have many cases in the last 10 years defending many Arab political parties, and as you said, one of the most cases that were brought before court is the cases of the political party of Azmi Bishara, because this political party, Balad, advocate for Israel as state for all of its citizens, democratic state. And the Attorney General, in one of my cases in 2003, the Attorney General of Israel argued that this platform of political party damage and hurt and inconsistent with the constitutional demand of definition of defining Israel as Jewish and democratic state, because as he argued, Jewish and democratic state cannot be state for all of its citizens and cannot be a full democracy. And therefore, this political party is not allowed to run for the Knesset. And was one of the most important cases before the Israeli court, Supreme Court, that I had to stand and to argue that a democratic platform of any political party is legitimate in this century. And the international law is not prohibiting any political party to come and say that my agenda is a democratic one. And yes, democratic vision is in contradictory with the definition of Israel as a Jewish and democratic state. Now, I succeeded in this case. The Supreme Court was split, 7 justices with me and 4 justices against me. But I think one of the reasons why I succeeded in this case, that Israeli Supreme Court didn't want to be the first Supreme Court in the history to disqualify a political list just because its platform is a liberal and democratic platform. And the last election, 2 Arab political parties, one of them of Azmi Bishara and the other is called Arab United List, were disqualified by the Knesset to run for the election because also part of that, this argument that they argue full equality, and full equality is not consistent with the definition of Israel as a Jewish and democratic state. And again, we brought this case before the Israeli Supreme Court, but also this time we succeeded because right on the landmark case of the previous election, 2003. But as you said, the need that to go to the court and to discuss and to feel that you are facing very, very hard case just because your client is a democratic client or he argue for democratic platform, this can say a lot about the meaning of Jewish and democratic state. In renew us many of pro-Israeli beliefs naively, I think, that the definition of Israel as Jewish and democratic state has nothing to do with equal right and liberty. But I can say to them honestly that they are wrong. They are wrong because even the Attorney General of Israel and the Israeli Supreme Court say that they are wrong. Israel Supreme Court and the Attorney General of State say that to have a platform of state for all citizens, a democratic state, is not consistent, is not compatible with the definition of Israel as a Jewish and democracy.
That is extremely important. That in fact the Attorney General agrees that Israel is not a democratic state.
Exactly. This is what the representative of the Attorney General argued in this case with due respect of Hosni Bashara. Israel is a Jewish state, meaning Israel cannot have full equality between the Arab and the Jews. There is no full equality between Arab and Jews. And Mr. Hosni Bashara argued for full equality. Full equality meaning that Israel will be democratic state and not a Jewish state. And therefore, his list should be disqualified.
Because he is a threat to the state.
Yeah, because his platform, his political platform, is a liberal one. And you cannot have a liberal platform in the parliament. Liberal platform means that every person is entitled for full rights regardless of his ethnicity or of his race or belonging. In Israel, the law gives weight for your belonging. Your belonging is a matter. If you are a Jewish person, it's a matter. If you are Arab person, it's a matter. Meaning, based on Israel law, the ethnic belonging is not neutral. It's a matter of law. So you cannot come and say, I am dreaming to have a full vision of a full democratic vision. This dream in the Knesset, meaning in Israel parliament, means to change the character of Israel from Jewish state to democratic state. This is what the Attorney General argue, this is what Israel consensus argue, and this is what the Shin Bet, your example, argue in 2 years ago.
You know, in April this month, former yes. Haifa University professor Ilan Pape mentioned yes. a law that was recently passed in Israel, which provided that anyone who did not acknowledge that Israel was a democratic Jewish state can be prosecuted for treason.
There is no law such that. I think he made a mistake by bringing a statement from the head of the Shin Bet, Israeli intelligence, that 2 years ago, that he said that we, the intelligence of Israel, will prosecute any person who want to change the character of Israel from Jewish state to a democratic state. However, there is a law in Israel saying that if you are going to advocate in the Knesset, in the parliament, against the definition of Israel as Jewish and democratic state, you won't be allowed. You will be disqualified.
Well, and also, you know, in the body of the law, you know, the framework of the laws, which was changed, I think, in 1980, and that is the foundation of law. It says here about the association. It says here, where the court, faced with a legal question requiring decision, finds no answer to it in statute law or case law or by analogy, it shall decide it in the light of the principles of freedom, justice, equity, and peace of Israel's heritage. Of Israel's heritage. That is to say, it has to judge all cases in terms of what Israel perceives at that time.
Yeah.
Not in terms of international law or in terms of equity.
Yeah, this law says that the Jewish law part of Israel jurisprudence, and it's true. Doesn't mean that in all the cases they use that, but you are right, there are many laws and many decisions emphasized always the Jewishness of the state. I am, as a lawyer here in Israel, who face daily the law, for me, part of my work is the assumption assumption that I am working in a state that defined itself as Jewish state in very ethnic matter, in very excluding way. And just take the citizenship law. The citizenship law say every Jew in the world can become automatically citizen of Israel if he just immigrate to Israel. But I am, as a Palestinian citizen of Israel, who has been lived here with his family's ages before 1948 and before the 19th century. My family here in Israel, Palestine, has been for at least 300 years. I am not allowed to get married to Palestinian just because she is Palestinian, lives in West Bank, in Ramallah, or in Gaza. But if I am a Jew, I can get married to any person. If I am a Jewish citizen, I can get married to any person in the world that I will wish. And if I am a Jewish American person, I have never been in Israel, I don't know the Hebrew, and he doesn't, or she, the American, doesn't know the Hebrew as I know it and I speak it, he can become equal citizen in Israel to live, not just to come here and to live in Tel Aviv. He even can become one of the oppressors. He can live in the settlements in the West Bank. He can live on the account on Palestinian land. He can be part of the group who confiscated Palestinian land in the occupied territories and to live there and to get benefit from Israel. And his benefit that he got, part of the taxes that I pay to Israel. So citizenship law can tell you all the story.
Yeah, and there are also laws which don't appear to be discriminatory, but maybe couched in apparently reasonable, even lofty language, but they use deliberately vague prosecutorial language, which is slanted to permit the government to prosecute the Arab minority on any imagined pretext. For example, yeah, reasonable suspicion. And yeah, engaging in so-called illegal activities without ever mentioning what reasonable suspicion is or what illegal activities are. And these laws can be classified as discrimination in stealth discrimination, undercover. So while yeah, Israel can always point to some cases or some outwardly equal laws, in effect, they are stealth discriminatory laws.
Yes, you are right. There are laws or decisions of the government that seem on their face as a neutral decision, but in fact they discriminate indirectly against the Palestinian citizens of Israel. For example, the government use intensively the standard or the criteria of serving in the army. For example, they say, we will give you benefit to buy land if you serve in the army. It doesn't matter when you served in the army, maybe 20 years ago, but all of those benefits goes to the Jews only. Why? Because the Arab don't serve in the army. So when you know that the Arab don't serve in the army, you can use this criteria of served in the army as a criteria for distinction between Arab and Jews without saying that this discrimination against the Arab, but in actually and in fact the Arab will be excluded, and this is why the Arab are excluded even in Israel University from many universities, many benefits, many economic and social benefits, just because they didn't serve in the army. And if you are a Jewish person and you are very, very rich person and you just served in the army 20 years ago, some of those decisions apply to you and give you benefit. And if I am Palestinian citizen of Israel, I came from very, very poor family, I won't get those benefits because I didn't serve in the army. Those decisions and those cases, like using neutral criteria, but in fact, in order to exclude the Arabs. Other example, as you mentioned, the security, using the security in order to prosecute the Arabs or the Palestinians in general, in many cases. One of Israel law is saying that is confirming the administrative detention. What that mean, administrative detention? You can put in jail for 6 months in Israel without bringing you before trial, without giving you the opportunity to see and to examine the evidence against you. Why? Because the Minister of Defense of Israel issue a certificate saying that you are a security threat for Israel. And if you are a security threat of Israel, they can put you 6 months in jail without trial. And why there is no trial? Because they said we cannot give you the opportunity to examine the materials against you because we want to keep secretly the source who give us this material against you as a danger of Israel. Thousands of Palestinians today, they are in jail in Israel for a very long time without trial. And the state, through the Minister of Defense, can extend this time from 6 months to another 6 months for a long time without bringing the Palestinian before a court. Now, this law on its face could be seen locked as a neutral, but if you look to the jail of Israel, you won't find a Jewish today, you won't find a Jewish person who is in jail under the clause of administrative detention. And today we have the data, and we are going to publish today, this evening, our newsletter at our website www.adala.org, data about the Arab prisoners in Israel, and based on those data, which rely on Israeli sources, Israel official sources, 70% of the prisoners in Israel are Arab.
Also, there was a recent case, I think, for employment in the railways, that workers were required to have served in the military. Otherwise, they would be laid off.
Yeah, we have this case, and this case will appear also in our newsletter. More than 100 Arab workers, citizens of Israel, they have been working for a long time in the railway of Israel, and for the sudden, the railway got decision that if you didn't serve in the army, you are not allowed to continue to work. That means to exclude all the Arabs from the railway system, and all of those Arabs were fired, and we represent them now before the labor court, and this is example how using the military services in labor cases and social and economic benefits.
Mr. Jabarin, I think that you are involved in it's a dangerous profession for you.
That make significant to my life. Make my life very significant when you fight legally for freedom and liberty and equality for all.
Well, I mean, this begs the comment, how can a country whose parliament passes legislation which discriminates in law against 20% of its population possibly be viewed as a democratic state? And yet here in the United States, everybody talks of Israel as the model democratic state. And how can a country whose laws, rules, and regulations promote the separation of ethnic groups within its citizenry not be viewed as a racist apartheid state? I mean, the ownership, land ownership, the housing, that essentially separates Jews from non-Jews in Israel is a form of apartheid.
This you have to ask the American. I think the American people or the American citizens are the only citizens in the world that they believe strongly that Israel is a democratic state or a model for democracy. I don't see that in Europe. We don't see that in Africa or Asia in Latin America. The American citizen, they have to ask themselves why this people, this nation, that the American nation, which believe in liberty and equality for all, why they don't see the political situation here, why they cannot understand that Israeli occupation is the longest occupation since the Second World. The Palestinian people in West Bank and Gaza and East Jerusalem, they have been under occupation more than 40 years, meaning military occupation. And the Palestinian citizen of Israel facing discrimination daily because Israel defined itself as Jewish state. Why we cannot see that if New York, for example, defined itself as Christian state? What will happen to non-Christian if New York will say, I am going to give the privilege to a Christian only? What the response will be to the non-Christian in New York if a New York municipality said, we are going to promote the Christian values and the Christian heritage in New York, and we are going to define New York City as Christian and democratic city? What the response of non-Christian will be, and what the response of the liberal Christian will be? So we all the time, the non-American face this question, why the American nation doesn't got it?
Yes, that is a very, very good question, Mr. Jabarin. I wish I could continue this discussion with you, but we are running out of time at this point. And I'd like to thank you very, very much for being our guest today on Speaking Palestine.
Thank you.
Thank you. Allah Mak. Bye-bye.
And there you have it. Every country in the world knows that Israel is not a democratic state. But the United States government and our media continue to project to us the fraudulent image of Israel as a democratic state. How many times have we heard media talking heads and government officials, including senators and representatives, continue to pummel into us the lie that Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East? That in spite of the fact, as mentioned by Mr. Jabarin and pointed out by Israel's own Attorney General in 2003, that Israel's basic law itself prohibits Israel from being a democratic state with equal rights for all its citizens. And in spite of the fact that Israel's secret service, the Shin Bet, has criminalized the advocacy of equal rights by threatening to arrest, jail, and prosecute anyone engaged in that endeavor. Given all these indisputable facts, does anyone still believe that Israel is a democracy with equal rights for all its citizens? Well, that does it for today. We wish our listeners a pleasant and restful weekend and look forward to having you with us next week, same time. Until then, this is Sharif Fahm, signing off for now and reminding our listeners to get involved. Go to Palestine and see for yourselves how our hard-earned tax dollars to the tune of $15 million are being given to Israel every day to finance the killing of Palestinian civilians and the destruction of Palestinian society with aircraft and weaponry supplied by the United States, when we could use every penny right here in the United States, amongst many other things, to help Americans who have lost their jobs, provide health care for the millions of Americans who can't afford health care, and help provide education to American children. This country should suspend its military aid to Israel. until Israel abides by international law. Thank you, and until next time.
من شتات